protocols imposing our faith on others, or is it just a matter of dialoguing? Hey, this is Father Voskin. I'm a priest of the Armenian Church, just back from Omaha, Nebraska. And I'm ready to connect the dots for you between our spiritual, our emotional, our psychological, and everything in between selves. This is episode number 535 of The Next Step, and we're inviting you to take it with us right now.
Hi, this is Susie from In His Shoes Ministries. What you're about to listen to is an episode of The Next Step with Father Voskin. Here, Father Voskin provides a very distinctive and consistent voice for Armenian Orthodoxy, based on the solid principles of love, faith, and hope as expressed by our Lord Jesus Christ. We produce these shows every week for a vast audience, which includes those who are searching for practical and deeper applications of faith, to disenfranchise members of the church community, and of course the neophyte, those who are discovering truths in ancient orthodoxy. So we invite you to turn up the volume and get ready to take the next step.
Protocol. You don't think about that in terms of church. You know that church is kind of like rough and rigid, but protocol. Thought about that this week. There's a protocol, for instance, when someone passes away in the service, in commemorating that life. There are certain rituals, certain words that are said. When we get into religion, when we get into ancient churches, institutions, sometimes we feel that these protocols get in the way, don't we, right? Like, why is everything formulated? Why are there liturgies that have set rhythms to them, right? We back away. Everything should be a little bit more freely, we think, freely expressed. But certainly in everything else in our life, there are certain protocols and procedures that you follow. Well, let me make a few comments about where I'm at right now. You probably noticed that the fan is not spinning. Last couple weeks have been very, very hot in this studio. And it was brought to my attention that the fan was making noise. In fact, last week I was interviewed on a podcast by Leon Gabrielian of Thriving Life Club. And actually, it was a really interesting podcast. It turned out much better than I expected. It was for me. I mean, you know, you do an interview, you expect that they're going to ask you questions. But in this case, it was good because I was able to really focus in on what's making me tick these days. I don't know. Does that make sense to you? You know, somebody asks you questions, and then you find out a little bit more about yourself by going through those questions. So all in all, it was a great interview, and I'm looking forward to hearing the final podcast. And definitely we'll have a link on our show notes as soon as we get that. Actually, we'll put a link today because I had a chance to go through some of his podcasts. Very good stuff out there, okay? It's about positive living. It's about, well, as the name implies, Thriving Life Club, living that thriving life. So I do want you to check out that link on today's podcast notes. I'll put a link to that. And of course, when it does come out, we'll share it with you. And anyway, I'm mentioning this because, you know, we're on the interview and he's saying, I'm hearing a ticking. I'm hearing something. And, you know, today's microphones, today's technologies, even from 10 years ago when we first started podcasting and we were making our first recordings, they're so advanced. Little noises, little things, you know, an ant walking across the room on the other side of this giant room can be picked up on these little microphones. So he says to me, there's a ticking. And yeah, sure enough, we had to turn the fan down. And probably you have noticed that my voice is a little bit different. I do need that air today because, oh, I just got back from Nebraska. And I'm going to share some great stuff with you. I met some incredible people, and the story is just as incredible. We started on that journey last week. If you remember last week's podcast, we talked about I was getting ready to go to Nebraska. Well, I am back right now, and I'm going to share with you. But in the meantime, it was just like an odd set of circumstances. I had to get on a plane, and I lost 2 hours going there. So I get to Nebraska, to Omaha, Nebraska, known for its steaks, right? You've probably all seen those ads for Omaha steaks. Well, sure enough, you get off the airplane, and there in Omaha Airport, there's a big kiosk for Omaha steaks. I go, okay, I know this, you know. And so we got picked up by the prop wash gang. Yeah, I was there as their guest, United States Air Force, the prop wash gang. And I shared with you the story about how one of their planes was shot down, and it fell right in Armenia, 1958. So I had a chance to speak with them, and I'll share with you in a few minutes. But what I'm getting to, all this, yes. Don't look at me like that. Yes, it does take it. It's part of a good story, okay? Don't blame me. So all of this to say that, yeah, these microphones are sensitive. My voice is kind of messed up because I was on a flight that lost 2 hours. And then in the morning, I had to get up to get on a flight to get back to Los Angeles. And that flight left at 5:45 from Omaha. Well, the 5:45 meant I needed to get out of the hotel at 4:30, which means I needed to get ready by 4:00. I had to wake up. Well, I was awake at 2:00, which happened to be biologically my 12:00, my midnight. So that day was just kind of like really messed up. And I got on this plane, and from Omaha, we ended up going to Phoenix, and from Phoenix, we ended up going to LAX. Long story short, I got congested in the head, I got some nasal issues, ended up with a cold, I have a little cough going, and I'm doing my podcast today, okay? And I'm going to start off with this little protocol issue, because it was very touching. I spoke to the Prop Wash Gang. This is a group of servicemen who served and serve our country diligently, and it was just so wonderful to be in their midst. And I was the keynote speaker, and I started off talking about a very personal and important, emotionally charged moment for me, because there was many reasons why I was there. Remember, and do listen, I don't want to repeat the whole story. Do listen to last week's podcast. I went over the entire story, but basically it happened in 1958 during the Cold War, United States, Soviet Union, and this C-130 is shot down and falls into Armenia in a small village called Sasnashen. Sasnashen is right out of Gyumri. It's about 55 miles northwest, I think, of Yerevan, the capital. And so we were commemorating the 60th anniversary of that shootdown. And I was the guest speaker. I was the keynote speaker. And I tried to relate. I tried to bring my portion of it as an Armenian priest, like, why am I there? Why am I in Nebraska commemorating this as an Armenian priest? And obviously for a few reasons, one of them being Armenian. I've also lived in Soviet Armenia, a unique thing, an American born who has lived, not just visited, but lived in Soviet Armenia back during the Brezhnev time. So I brought small little incidences and stories from there as well. But as a priest, I was there, and I offered a prayer for these 17 victims, these 17 men who fell because of this shooting in 1958, and probably the first time that Hokihankist, a requiem, Armenian Iverin Yerusalem, was sung for these 17 men. I did that. I went there as a representative in his shoes, talking about going beyond that experience and doing something beyond remembrance, but actually reaching out to others. People who have gone through suffering have a responsibility to reach out to those who are suffering today. We talked about in issues, but this personal issue, this is what I wanted to start off with today, because it was very, very personal. It has to do with my father. My father was a veteran of the United States Army. He served during the Korean War. And, you know, probably didn't appreciate that service until after he was gone, until after it was too late. It was at his funeral in 1991. And by this time, I had been a priest of, 9 years. I had done my share of funerals, even before that as a deacon. And you sometimes get, I don't want to say immune to them, but emotionally you get distance from them. But of course, your father's funeral, there was a lot of emotions going. But I have to admit that the one time where I completely could not help myself and truly broke down was when, at the end of the beautiful church services, at the time my clergy brethren had come out, and there was quite a few of clergymen at my father's funeral, and all of them consoling our family. We were very, very grateful. But this little episode happened right after the prayers were said. And my father's coffin was draped with an American flag. And these servicemen came up and they folded the flag and they handed it to my mother. And they said these words, which I remember until today. And so in preparing for this Nebraska trip, I looked up these words. I just wanted to find out what were these words. I Googled it. You know, what are the words that are sent? And they are exactly the way I remember them. I mean, that's what an impression it made on me at the time. And I just want to share it with you. It says, on behalf of the President of the United States, the United States Army, and a grateful nation, please accept this flag as a symbol of our appreciation for your husband's honorable and faithful service. I don't know. It just took me somewhere, and I remember then, and even preparing for this speech last week, emotionally it got to me, it touched me. But I wanted to talk about that protocol issue. That there are certain words, there are certain patterns, there are certain liturgies in our life that we tend to discount here in the West. We tend to say that these are not necessary. And especially when it comes to issues of faith, we tend to say these are not necessary. Now, I want you to think about this for a moment. How many of you have been converted because of reason? Because of logic? How many of you have reached your place of wherever your faith is, whatever you believe in or whatever you don't believe in? Is it because of reason or is it because of your personal experiences? What I'm saying here is that not too many people really get swayed into believing something one way or another based on somebody, you know, hammering it into them. It's basically seeing something and knowing that it works for you. And so I have these opportunities to speak at different places, and it's always interesting what different responses I get. And I've shared this with you in the past. I mean, it's beautiful. I'm very thankful. I'm very thankful when people come up and say, "Oh, Father, that was the greatest. We loved it," and everything. That's very nice. I appreciate it. But you know what I really appreciate even more is when somebody takes a moment to maybe find a piece, something that I said, and maybe even challenge me and to say, you know, you said this, but I was thinking about it. You know, this is what went through my head. And that's beautiful because it means it inspired you to think. It inspired you to move in another direction. And this is very, very important. It means a lot to me. It means you're listening. It means you have something to share rather than just, you know, canned laughter or canned applause. I've shared that with you in the past too, right? My pet peeve with watching so many shows that have canned audience reaction. You know, you say something and everybody is ha 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 or they applaud. You know, it's like, They're telling you what's funny. They're telling you when to applaud. In the old days, they'd hold, I don't know if they still do, I haven't been to a taping in years, but they used to hold up these cards that would say applause, like this is the place where we need to applause. Okay, so this priest spoke, let's tell him that he did good. No, you know, a challenge, take something, it means that you heard something. And you know what? Not every sermon, not every speech that you hear is going to vibrate in you the same way another one that really talked to you will. But it's just like singing. A songwriter writes a song, and certain songs really make an impression on you. Someone writes a book. Not every book touches you the same way. But in the end, all of these are means by which people are exchanging their ideas and their opinions, and you can pick and choose whatever you want. Now, I said this earlier about the protocol. The protocol, you have a set standard by which a prayer is delivered or a message is sung, like when they gave the flag, you know, on behalf of the United States. There is a protocol. There's a set standard of words that are given. Now, think about that in terms of some of the traditional churches, namely the Orthodox community, namely the Roman Catholic community, where you sit in a liturgical lifestyle. And people are very critical of this. They say that, you know, it should be more free-flowing. But when you do regiment it, when you do have these protocol, what you're doing is you're giving it a system and you're giving it a priority so that you can count on it. Think about it in terms of what I shared with you. Here it was 25, 26 years after my father had died, but I was able to go and put my finger on exactly the words that were given. And they now mean, well, they now have 25 years plus on them as what that young man experienced when he heard him the first time and what I'm experiencing now, and I'm able to share it with others. Now, I've spoken in Nebraska. I have to tell you, speaking to the prop wash gang, these were all people who had given themselves, given their time, their service to our country through the United States Air Force. We were by the Air Force base over there, and they gave me a piece of the plane that was shot down. I mean, I could not be more honored. They gave me a beautiful, beautiful framed piece of the plane. And with an inscription and a plaque. They gave me a plaque with the name of the 17 men on that. I will cherish not only these items, but I will cherish the memories because the people there were just so sincere. They were listening. They were taking in. It was interesting. Many of them had worked among Armenians. Well, basically, they were stationed in Turkey. So they spoke, a lot of them spoke Turkish. A lot of them spoke Russian because they were doing intelligent operations. And they knew of Armenia. They knew that Armenia was right there. But remember, Armenia was under Soviet system. So no matter how much it was Armenia, it was also the Soviet Union you were looking at. And we were able to share with them some of the stories of what it meant to be Armenian. What is the Armenian nation? And for many, it was an eye opener to be able to hear that this small country, landlocked amidst all of these enemies, is able to thrive and survive. And it was a very special, special evening for me. I'm sure it was for many of them. But I walked away, coming back and saying, you know, we have this opportunity to share so much of the goodness that God has blessed us with. And they were sharing these 17 men that had fallen tragically. I was sharing with them the prayers, the statements of the church. And each person walks away taking away what they want. And at many of these events, just like this one, and people came up to me and said, this is what I got out of it. This is what I heard. And it's interesting because you've got different people saying different things. And that's what I want to share with you during the second portion. What is it that makes us want to share with others what we have? Like, in other words, evangelism, missionary work. How important is that? Is that really reasonable? Should we be doing that? Or are we imposing our beliefs and our faiths on other people? Is it better to just be quiet and let the tide go and just kind of everybody find their own equilibrium, find their own space? Or is there a value? Is there something in educating and sharing what you have? I want you to think about that, because it certainly got to me. From few people who were at that event came up to me and said, hey, you know what? I'm walking away with this. And I'm thinking to myself, wait a minute. That's not what I said. But that's what you walk away with. And it got me to thinking about the bigger question, right? What is it that we say? What is it that we preach? What is it that we talk about? What is Christianity? What is it that we share with people? And what do people take? What did Christ say? And how did we take it in so many different directions? Here it was. We were at a simple gathering. And this was by no way an exception to the rule. This happens everywhere. Places that I talk, even this podcast, I get emails from people that will say, you said something there. And in my head, I'm going, I know I didn't mean it that way, but they have taken something else from it. And I think to myself, Christ, he gave the simple message of love, and we've taken it out in many, many different formats, in many different ways. I mean, and the proof of this is look at the denominationalism, right? We not only have the mainstream, whether it's the Catholic, the Orthodox, we have maybe 500 different branches of Protestantism, everybody taking it in their own way. And then you have the new Christian groups, so for instance, how Mormonism developed out of that, and how the Jehovah's Witness took it and took it in a different way. And so all of these things stem from one original message. And somehow through the years, people take it. And I want to share with you some ideas that I have about it, because it begs the bigger question, at what point is evangelism okay? At what point is missionary work? We go into different areas and we say, this is what we want you to believe. Why? When the person has his or her own set of beliefs, do we have that right? Should we have that right? Can we have that right? Let's talk about that coming up in our second portion. Every week I play a song of the day, something to kind of break up the... I'm realizing now it's more to break up the show. We sometimes get really heavy duty, don't we, right? Okay, so we'll break up a little bit of the show by playing the song of the day. I picked out this Armenian number. I hope you like it. Thank you. Arax is the name of the band. Crossing is the name of that album. And the song Sarenguka comes from the hills. You know, this came out a few years ago. I remember when this album first came out, I could not put it down. It was just like the entire thing. It's one of those albums where you play straight through. It's like there's a few bands that do this. By the way, tomorrow Paul McCartney puts out Egypt Station. And I think, you know, to me at least, and I know other people, there are certain bands where you just buy the CD and you just play it all the way through. And every song just has a rhythm to it. And it's interesting because now when we're in this digital world, music is not siphoned through in the same way, in the same order. For instance, when you had the big long LPs, or even with the CDs, there was an order to the songs. So one song would end and you'd get it at least in your head what the next song was. But not so now with different formats, especially the digital formats where they might align them alphabetically, not necessarily by track order. It's just an interesting phenomena because in your head you're playing the song and you know what's coming up, but the next one, of course, is something else. Anyway, like I said, this is Arax is the name of the band. Crossing is the name of the CD, the album. I'll definitely have a link on today's show notes. By the way, tomorrow, not only does Paul McCartney's new album, Egypt Crossing, come out, Egypt Station. There's a little mix with Paul and Arax, Egypt Station. But also, the United States government is issuing a stamp in memory of John Lennon. It's the John Lennon Forever stamp. And tomorrow morning, 11 o'clock New York time, they're going to be having the unveiling, and I believe it's going to be streamed on the internet. I'm definitely going to try to pick up on that. But I'll put a link on that as well on the show notes. And I'm feeling really bad because we're going to be hitting New York next Monday. I'll share with that. I'm going to be in New York for about a week and celebrating the Divine Liturgy at St. Vartan Cathedral coming up. And I'm just thinking, wow, I wish I had known about this John Lennon stamp just a few days earlier. It's interesting because here's the guy that they were trying to deport, and now they've issued a stamp 30 years later. And I say that's interesting, and I think that's the greatness of America, that they are able to move on, that they don't just stay in one place and say, well, you know, 30 years ago, we didn't like this guy, and so there's no redeeming value in him. But no, they're able to take it and process it and look it over and say, hey, maybe there is something. Maybe there is something that we missed. Anyway, I will have a link on today's show notes to the John Lennon stamp unveiling, as well as a link to today's song by Arax. Do check it out, all of their great music. Back in the last century, oh, so long ago, so long ago. I remember 1999, I remember it. An old guy that I am. 1999, they had all kinds of competitions and talk about who was the person of the century. And I believe it was Time magazine that came out with this competition, who is the person of the century. And people were suggesting different people, and I suggested as well. It was something that we all wanted. It was more of a fun kind of thing. Of course, there were some people that took it absolutely too seriously, including, I remember, the Turkish lobby had gone up and suggested that Atatürk is the person of the century. Like, hey, nobody else matters, Atatürk. And they had some ridiculous number of votes, you know, a huge number of votes, obviously stuffing the ballot box. But if you remember, the person who won was Albert Einstein, and he came out to be the person of the century. Now, the one that I voted for, you know, they asked everybody, who do you think is the person of the century? It was interesting because I was along the same lines. No, it wasn't a pure scientist. It wasn't a physicist. No, but it was a relativist. And by that, I mean, I selected Margaret Mead, anthropologist. I thought her contributions to last century were probably the most important, because she talked about relativism, cultural relativism, and she had been to different countries and explained that what we believe here in America, what we believe in the Western world, is not necessarily what everybody else believes, and some very, very basic differences that we if we note, we will find that, you know, people are the same maybe physically, but very different culturally. Like, for instance, can you imagine matriarchal societies where the woman is at the top and the man is not? We can't imagine that, because so many of us have been brought up in patriarchal societies. It becomes difficult until you start reading about them, and you start reading about some of the people who live in different sheltered communities that are outside, off of the grid. And I think the contributions that Margaret Mead made to relativism were astounding. Something that at least for me is very important, because it always puts me in that perspective too, is that what is my faith? My faith works for me, and not necessarily works for everybody else. I think it can work for everybody else. That's how much I'm committed to my faith. But certainly I do understand that somebody else's faith is just as valid and is just as valid for them as mine is for me. And equally, theirs may not work for me. Probably doesn't, because I'm not a subscriber to their faith, right? But in the same way, I realize that what I have cannot be imposed on someone else. And religion is probably the greatest relative phenomena there is in our lives. In other words, it's relative. It works for you. It makes sense for you. It may not make sense for me, and it's okay, see? That's what I was alluding to earlier when I was talking about it. Have you come to faith because of reason? Has somebody convinced you that this is the right way? Or is it really something that you kind of like fall into place? It makes sense to you because it does. I know. It's a difficult one, because you want to say that, yeah, that there is some rationale behind your decision. Well, there is a rationale, okay? And it's not because, you know, the number of books in the Bible or because it has been accepted. The rationale is pure and simple. The system of life that is lived through that religion, through that faith, as a consequence of that faith, makes sense for you, and it works for you. Now, here's the issue. Here's the question that I have, and it's a big question. Do I have a right to impose my faith on somebody else? No, you probably don't. Nobody has that right to impose it. But how about teach it? How about share it? And we get into missionary work. We get into the entire idea of evangelization. We probably all can agree that faith, issues of faith, religion, spirituality, is a very personal decision. And people come to make those decisions personally. It works for them. This is especially within the ethnic communities, ethnic churches, has reached its pinnacle of discussion recently, because we're seeing more and more open dialogues and people saying that, okay, hey, well, let's use our case in the case of the Armenian Church. Okay, I'm Armenian, but I do not necessarily subscribe to the Armenian Church. Meanwhile, the Armenian Church is saying this is the birthplace of every Armenian, and every Armenian is a member of the church, blah, 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 blah. But in reality, the guy is saying, hey, wait a minute, I don't believe in those set of givens that you're preaching. So I don't consider myself a member or subscriber to this faith. These are relatively new concepts. I mean, all along, people have had freedom and talked about it. And certainly in their closet, they've been able to think about, hey, this doesn't make sense to me. But it hasn't been particularly articulated the way it is these days, and especially because we have that freedom to articulate, and because we feel that our voice has some kind of weight, that there is a reason that somebody will listen. I will post it on social media, and I will tweet it someplace, and somebody will say, oh, look at that person has some great insight into life. Basically, we all do. We all have things that make sense to us. And even the most mundane person, the person that we would think is the most mundane, who goes through some set of exercises and we say, hey, that doesn't make sense to us. It makes sense for them. Basketball. Yeah. One of the few things that doesn't make sense to me. It's a ball that you dribble and you put into one basket, and the other team gets it and they move it to the other side of the court and put it in another basket. And you can be pretty sure that they're going to move it from that side to the other side and back and forth. And there's excitement. I definitely understand the excitement. Yeah, you get a charge out of it. It's interesting. But at the end of the day, it's moving a basket from one hoop to the other and then scoring something. And as a consequence, millionaires are made. Are born and made. Millions and millions of dollars are exchanged in these games that are played by moving this ball from basket to basket. And meanwhile, if you said we need that same millions of dollars to be feeding the hungry, people would say, what? No. Wrong place. Can't do that. If you said we need the same millions of dollars to clothe the naked. No. But we can use that same millions of dollars to clothe the feet of the basketball players and have them make endorsements and so on. So you see that there's incongruity. People don't get it. But I do get it. I do get that that works for certain people. I do understand that works for certain people. It doesn't work for me. Now, at what point do I have the right to go out there and say that, hey, you know, yours is wrong and mine is right? The minute we use these expressions, right and wrong, now we're putting a value on it. We're saying that, you know, I'm saying that feeding the hungry is more important than dribbling a basketball. I'm saying that one is right and one is wrong, right? Correct? Okay. I mean, you're with me. That's what I'm asking. And obviously, there's another person who'll say, wait a minute. You know, the number of people that are given enjoyment and entertainment through the dribbling of this ball is so overwhelming. And we need to do it because we need to maintain. And I'm sure that there are people who will make... I'm telling you straight out, it's not the way I understand it, but I'm sure that there are people who will understand it in the way. At what point do I have a right to say that mine is more important, mine is right? Well, at certain point, you understand that yours gives you your faith, your understanding, your spirituality gives you comfort. It aligns you in the ways of peace. It brings happiness to you. And what do you want to do? You want to share it with others. And so when you want to share it with others, what do you say? You tell people, hey, it's working for me. Now, in the case, in the basketball example, arguably it would be said that it's not so much that they want to share it as much as there's profits to be made in sharing it. But how about if there are no profits? How about if my faith just makes me feel good? I know that there is a goodness. It brings peace. It brings understanding. It brings spiritual growth, maturity. It brings responsibility to my life. And I feel like I need to share that. Well, in so doing, we're also challenging others by saying that, well, yours doesn't do that. Yours doesn't do that. And that's why I feel like I need to impose my way. And that word impose is a very hard one to use, but that's what it is. Saying that this is what I believe and I think you should believe it as well. Doesn't work in religion. It doesn't work. Religion is one of the most relativistic phenomena that there is in our lives. You cannot impose your way because different things work for different people, and everything has an audience somewhere along the way. It works for different audiences, for different people. And so we come down to a very basic kind of understanding of what our faith is. Does it work for you? That's the question you need to ask. It's not a question of, does this work for everybody? But can I make it work in my life? Does it work for me? Now, once I establish this, we go to that very basic understanding of evangelization, which Mother Teresa had repeated, but I'm not sure who the author of it is that, you know, always preach the gospel, and whenever necessary, use words. In other words, just do it. And Mother Teresa is probably the best example of that, right? She's out on the streets of India. She's not trying to convert the Hindus to Christianity. She's just living the Christian lifestyle on the streets of India amongst the Hindus. And she was there and she's reaching out to people and bringing Christ's compassion to people, but not saying, hey, you know, come and change. If I'm right, and I could be wrong, I don't think she ever invited people to mass or services. Now, if people wanted to come, once they saw the brave person that she was, I don't think she would stop them and say, no, you're Hindu. Don't do this. But it wasn't an outright attempt to bring people to faith. But through your actions, people see. And those actions are louder than any of the words that we speak. Now, all this came about because after each session, every time that I speak here or there, and certainly this summer we've had so many opportunities to speak, there's always somebody who comes up and says, this is what resonated in your speech, in your thoughts. And I'm sure that when we get the new Armadoxy book off the press, people are going to come and say, you know, there's certain points here that you make, and this is what it is. And that's beautiful, right? Isn't that the challenge? Isn't that the challenge of thinking of the word dialogue, that we have a dialogue? And it's important to walk into those dialogues with respect. And that respect is only available when we understand that everybody has that same right. Everybody has that same right. See, we lose the respect when that imposition comes about and we start saying that, hey, wait, mine is better and I will impose my way because yours is wrong. And rather than doing that, how about engaging in a dialogue where we have respect for one another? Where we want to hear. And, you know, I have to tell you, in Nebraska, this is one of the key things that I found with the group of people that I was with. In one of our planes, a U.S. plane, a C-130, was shot down by the Soviets. It fell in a place called Armenia. And for all intents and purposes, it was shot down by Armenians. But no, they understood it as something else. They understood that this was something that happened. And they understood that theirs was to keep this memory alive. And by keeping that memory alive, what are you doing? You're actually engaging in that dialogue. You're keeping the doors open. You're not shutting doors. You're saying that, hey, I'm human. You're human. We are all children of God. We need to find a way of talking and reasoning. And this is really where I concluded my speech with them. It's like connecting the dots. Imagine in a place called Bellevue, Nebraska, in the middle of the United States, we were connected with some obscure village called Sasnashen in the middle of Armenia near Gyumri, 55 miles off of Yerevan, in this small landlocked country. And these two communities were sharing, were bridging gaps. And a priest from the most ancient of Orthodox traditions, of Christian traditions, is there singing an Armenian hymn in memory of these fallen 17 soldiers. Connecting dots. Respect. Reaching out for one another. To me, that's what this week was all about. I still haven't gotten off that high. I'm looking forward to sharing quite a long article and some thoughts, and I hope that you'll look it up by next week. We should have it done. We're waiting for some pictures to come out. I'm really excited to share the bigger story with all of you. But for today, it's about sharing our faith with one another, not through our words, but through the actions that come to us because we are moved by that faith. Here is Susie to make her announcements. I'll be back in a couple moments.
broadcast, I'd like to take this opportunity to remind you that this podcast is made possible through your prayers and generous donations. Since 2008, we have been providing quality programming through podcasts, educational videos, and streams, using technology's most current resources. The message of Armenian Orthodoxy is giving people an intelligent and practical answer to many of life's difficulties, including the challenge to bring peace to a hurting world. To become part of this dynamic ministry, please take a moment now to visit inhisshoes.org website and press on the donate button. Your encouragement goes a long way. Please accept our heartfelt appreciation. Thanks for listening, and God bless. We now return to this week's Next Step with Father Vazgen.
Thank you, Susie, for that announcement, and thank you, all of you, for your warm wishes, for the prayers that you extend our way, for the support, for your emails, your thoughts, all of the words of encouragement that reach us every week. This week, let's see, this Sunday, we're going to be at the St. Gregory Armenian Church in Pasadena. Yes, just down the street from our Apostle East studio. Actually, a walk away. We might even do the walk on that day. We're going to be celebrating Brother Clergyman Father Sarkis Petoyan, who is celebrating 50 years of service to the Armenian Church. Can you believe that? Yeah, we're going to be celebrating with him and the community in Pasadena. And then we're off to New York, and we're going to be with the new primate of the Eastern Diocese, and looking forward to celebrating Hatzfatz, the elevation of the cross, at St. Vartan Cathedral with a very special service. We're going to have the Divine Liturgy in the morning, and then in the evening, Father Daniel, the new primate, has worked out an opportunity for us to venerate, to be in the presence of the true cross, the true cross of Jesus Christ. It is going to be brought out, opportunity for us to worship together, for us to celebrate the elevation of the Holy Cross in probably, at least for me, in my 36 years as a priest, my first time that I'll have a chance to celebrate that particular day in the presence of the actual cross. I have some information that he's put on our on the Eastern Diocese website. I will have a link on today's show notes so you could read about it. But next week we will be broadcasting from New York, and I'll be giving you more details about that coming up. That about does it for the immediate future. We're looking forward to being in Armenia in October, end of October. And we'll give you details as we get closer to that. And definitely we're going to make a stop by in Sasna Shen to share the commemorative thoughts and the energy with the people there. With that, I want to thank you for joining us today. I hope you enjoyed today's show as much as we enjoyed producing it for you. We're at all the usual spots on social media and, of course, at the flagship inhisshoes.org. And so with that, and with a big shout out to my wife, Susan, on her birthday, happy birthday, before the Facebook crowd gets to her, I'll call it a day. On behalf of Susie, our producer, Ken, our engineer, this is Father Vazgen, inviting you to join us again next week when we will take the next step.
And now here's the fine print. The information and comments presented within this podcast and our website do not necessarily represent the views of the Armenian Church hierarchy, but are presented as a challenge to define the dynamics of Armenian Orthodoxy in all aspects of life. Listening to these shows is habit-forming. Addictive behavior associated with the next step is rarely, if ever, remedied. Rather, the next step is known to relieve and cure common cases of narrow-mindedness, prejudice, numbskullness, and glaucoma in patients over the age of 20. Results may vary depending on credit rating. Findings are based on double-blind studies conducted in Istanbul and Jerusalem. Side effects include mind expansion, clarity of focus, higher rates of heart palpitations, sensitivity to the pain of others, and occasional nausea. The management and production crew of epostle.net take full responsibility for changes you will experience. Not valid with any other offer.
Off, but I'm top, there's it.